many of them have seen share prices go from 20 cents to $3 and then sort of back to 40 cents again during that period on the back of fantastic discoveries and in various fields in the Cooper Basin, in the Perth Basin and over in the Taranaki Basin and in China for the case of Horizon Oil. When you add it all up, they've actually just burnt up value for shareholders.
Is this because in a modern world they don't want oil and gas anymore?
No, the global demand for oil is rising at 1.2 million barrels a day every year. Consumption of oil now about 94 million barrels of oil a day. That includes oil and condensate and LPG liquid propane gases and biofuels and all the other types of liquids. It's probably about 80 million barrels of actual oil and 94 million barrels of hydrocarbon liquids that are being consumed every year. And that just keeps on going up by over a million barrels of oil a day every year. So next year it'll be 95 million barrels and the year after that 96. So that, no, there's a lot of demand for this high density energy product that we call crude oil, and it's not going away.
If there's a lot of demand for it, and why are these companies not doing as well as they should then?
Because it's a very capital intensive business, and the only companies that can survive in that are big companies with large balance sheets, like the Woodsides of the world.
So we're not going to see a lack of oil and gas extraction. We're going to see consolidation, less companies?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, even with BHP, which has a massive light tight oil business onshore the United States, and they've invested about $26 or $27 billion in that business over the last 7 years. That business has now been written down to like $12 billion. So they've written $15.5 billion off that business, even though last year it was producing 340,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day. And even in 2012, when the oil price was double what it is now and the gas price was also double what it is now, that business was consuming $2 billion a year in net cash. So there were, so that even after spitting out $2 billion in operating cash flows to support itself and to develop those fields, the BHP had to spend $4 billion. So it was actually costing the company $2 billion a year to keep it going.
With that litany of doom, why would anyone or any company be circling to buy them?
There's always the thrill of the chase, and we've seen when companies make spectacular discoveries. FAR made a big discovery offshore Senegal, and the share price goes from 5 cents to 25 cents. And that's what investors are looking for. They're looking for the time when, and you cast your eyes back to about a decade ago when AWE and Rockoil were making discoveries at the Cliff Head oil field offshore Perth Basin, and the share prices all rocketed on the back of this discovery and the potential for profits. And certainly when those projects came on stream, they were highly profitable. The thing about making an oil discovery these days is it's almost like a negative, because people say, oh my gosh, you know, the companies have to go out and borrow $1 billion to develop this field, and how are they going to be able to finance that? So the positive is that, you know, you find something in the ground which is valuable. The negative is that actually is a very costly business to go out and develop this, and you put yourself at risk. And this is what we've found now with Santos and Origin and these companies that have developed these coal seam gas projects into liquefied natural gas at Gladstone. They borrowed heavily to do this, and they were feeling that, well, they could sell that liquefied natural gas for $15, $16 a gigajoule and they would all make a lot of money. And just as they were commissioning the projects, of course, the price of liquefied natural gas fell to $6 a gigajoule, which means they don't make any money at all. So, and they've put themselves at risk because they've taken on, you know, billions of dollars worth of debt, and they've just been hit by this sort of perfect storm of high debt and low commodity prices.
Who's going to want to buy a company that has just blown out debt like that?
Well, the assets might want to be, the people might buy the assets because they're taking a long-term view. I mean, over the long term, the current prices for oil and gas are not sustainable on an economic point of view, too low. Yeah,
which I suppose the argument for that, against that, is that with the oil price not being sustainable, the move will be into renewable energy.
Well, what we're seeing, I mean, the United States, for instance, hasn't built a coal-fired power station for the last dozen years, and all of the new power generating capacity being built in the United States is either wind, photovoltaic, or combined cycle gas turbine. So they're using natural gas. They're moving away from the more polluting technologies into less polluting technologies, but a lot of oil, of course, and even more and more gas now is being used in transport for transport requirements. And oil is used for plastics and pharmaceuticals and for building products and all sorts of other things outside of power generating. And it's going to, even with the best will in the world, and fossil fuels still supply 85% of the world's energy requirements. Mm. So it's a big, you know, it's a lot. I mean, nuclear is about 5 or 6, hydro is about 4 or 5, and the rest, about 5%, is renewables.
And what outside of energy generation, then in the other industrial applications and transport, aircraft fuels and so on, what percentage is that?
The transport applications, I think it's about 40% of oil.
Does the discussion get a bit lost then when all we're hearing about is renewable energy as
power
in power generation?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, how quickly can electric cars come in? You know, at the moment you could say, oh, Tesla electric car, it's very efficient and so forth, but, you know, they're actually... In most places, Teslas are actually powered by coal because it's the electricity produced by coal that pumps up their batteries. And people say, oh, the batteries are very efficient. They're 95% efficient and a coal-fired power station is only 36% efficiency. Yeah, but the batteries don't actually, they're not a primary source of energy. You have to pump them up from something. You know, the clever people are actually having photovoltaics on their roof and pumping up their batteries using the renewable energy. And that's, but you know, to get that infrastructure in place and to replace this huge 85% dependency on fossil fuels that we currently have globally, is a task which is going to take, you know, longer than 25 years. And, you know, the time is running short. The beginning of the Industrial Revolution, I like to say, you know, there were 800 million people on the planet. We've increased that number ninefold in 250 years. We've added 6.6 billion people. And even in the last 100 years, we've added 5.4 billion people. So in 1920, we were 2 billion people. Now we're 7.4. The population's rising by 80 million a year. These people all want toasters. They all want to drive cars. They all want to have hot water. They need energy. They need food. And the food is produced by fertilizers and pesticides and by diesel. I mean, we're actually turning petrochemicals into food to feed us. Without the diesel and the pesticides and the fertilizers, most of which are actually petrochemically based, we wouldn't be able to produce the amount of food, you know, organically using those techniques as we can produce today.